From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
I tell you what, gentlemen, if I see one more fat man with a beard, I'm going to stop having a look in the mirror.
Hey!
It's The Dice Men Cometh, episode 96, on the 10th of December, 2015. I'm Mark.
I'm Garth.
I'm Leon.
And we have a special guest in the studio, Andrew the Schwartz. we're going to get to him later. But first, look, everyone's talking about 15 days to Christmas. I say, who the force cares? Because it's 7 days until Star Wars The Force Awakens. The only religion I want to hear about in this festive season is Jedi.
Okay.
Garth.
Yes.
What's coming up on the show today?
Geez, well, we have got quite a lot of what we've been playing this week, because we have at least 3 to 4 games that we're going to try and talk about. We also will then spend a bit of time with our good friend Andrew talking about all the games that you should either A, buy, or B, buy for your friends or family or someone else for Christmas presents. So we're going to do yourselves a favour and just give you all the directions that you need. And we're going to then maybe talk about a competition that we're going to run. And that should probably fill up the hour.
Fantastic. That's going to keep us busy. Until then, we're going to drop the hammer.
That was Queen with Hammer to Fall on Edge Radio 99.3 with The Dice Men Cometh. We're going to discuss now what we've been playing, or more importantly, what you lads have been playing while I've been doing nothing but working and complaining about work.
And thank you so much for bringing that complaint to us.
Not a trouble.
So, we have been playing a plethora of games this week.
Or and a plethora?
A plethora. Not a behemoth.
A behemoth.
Are they dinosaurs? Yeah,
they are now.
Cool.
So, we're going to start with another Kickstarter from yet again one of one of our favourite Australian publishers, designers.
Oh,
surely.
Absolutely.
Surely
we must
now
be talking about our good friend David Harding and Grail Games,
exactly,
are we?
Exactly right. Oh. And I was very, very happy. Probably about a month and a half ago, I had a great day in the post where I got Guns and Steel by Grail Games, and then I also got Entropy arrive on the same day in different parcels. It was like Australia Day all over again. So I'm going to talk about Guns and Steel that, Mark, you and I had the opportunity to play about this time a week ago.
Oh, we did?
Maybe at about 8:30, quarter to 9, because this is a small box card game of which Grail Games are becoming really, really well known for, because it's just so simple. It works. You can take it anywhere. But geez, it packs a lot of game into a relatively small box. Mm. So let's just start with, what is this game? Well, Mark, you may not know this, but technology is a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
It's also possibly a double-headed horse, possibly also a bit of gunpowder, maybe a bit of Earth and space exploration as well.
Oh.
Because this game, in a relatively compact, recommended 40 to 70 minutes, although our game did take a bit longer because we're very, very thick, 2 to 4 player card game designed by Jesse Lee. And this is originally a Taiwanese game that got the English reprint where Grail Games were able to release it only in certain countries through Kickstarter. So from memory, Australia, New Zealand, UK, USA, and a few of the Asian countries as well. But essentially this card game is, I guess, recreating a whole lot of evolution in industrial life and what have you, because it starts in really very, very basic steel and horses. It then works its way up to be the gunpowder age, and then it works up to be cannons and the oil age, and then it goes up to the earth age, and then it goes up to space and beyond. Now, what I like on this game straight away is that you essentially almost use all the cards straight out of the box.
Yeah, there's nothing wasted, that's
for
sure.
No, there isn't. And you shuffle them all up and you place down this really lovely pyramid that just looks fantastic on the table. Takes up, you know, a medium amount of space, so you can fit it on a decent, normal-sized table. And essentially, the layers of the pyramid are the various ages that you're going to be competing for with your resources. Because, in its essence, this is a hand management, deck-building, resource-use kind of game where you'll essentially, on your turn, only be doing a few things. You're going to start with a couple of cards in your hand, And you're going to play one of these double-sided cards that you've got down as a resource. And your resources might be horses or steel or iron, perhaps, gunpowder, oil. And then you get in the later phases into earth and space exploration, which are essentially wild cards that count for anything else. You're going to play one of those cards. Then you're going to play another one of the cards from your hand, but face up. And on the face up side, you've got a whole bunch of unique abilities that these cards can do. They can allow you to refresh cards that are already in your tableau and turn them from their development side to their resource phase, and it means you'll be able to use them again to ultimately buy new cards. Or you can fight the competition, i.e. your other players, and try and lay the smack down on them. Because this is, unlike a lot of the games we play, you're playing for the most points.
Shocking.
Leon, really? I know you've not played a game for a little while, but that's how some of our games are determined.
Points.
Yeah. Mm. You might call them victory points in some regard.
Ooh, exciting.
I know. So you're going to play this resource down. You're going to play a development card up. You're then going to try and purchase some cards. And it's got a really simple mechanic where if you're going for the bottom layer of the pyramid, each of the cards which are placed development side up have a number of resources that you need to be able to have to purchase them. So you might have to get a horse and a steel to be able to buy a mill or something like that. When you get it, it automatically goes into your plateau, your tableau on the table, which is great. However, you can also go and try and advance the technology and go for the cards that are one or two levels above the current bottom of the pyramid. But every time you do that, you have to pay an increasing number of resources. Mm. So you can put that strategy in place where I'm going to try and put all my cards out on the table, which might be the basic resources of bread and horses and steel and what have you, and go for some really good technology. But you're going to burn through a lot of cards that way.
That sounds like a really good strategy.
Mm.
I wish I had remembered you could do that, because now that you say it, I was like, oh, I remember you explaining at the start of the game, but I completely forgot. No, it's just we just seem to be working the one level at a time.
Yeah.
Which is not that bad because we all were doing that.
Exactly right. And the way it kind of forces you to focus on that last or lower layer of the pyramid is that at every layer there is also a wonder that is up for grabs.
Mm.
And the wonders are snaffled up as soon as someone meets the condition, which might be in the very, very bottom layer that you're the person who has the I think, four base resources face up, which the base resources are just your bread and iron. As soon as someone's got four of those face up, bang, you can take that first wonder, which is the pyramids, and you'll get, I think, about three or four victory points in this, which is a good start, and then you'll work on the next level of the pyramid.
The pyramids are made out of bread?
Yeah. Well, how else did
and
they feed the
slaves?
And you
didn't invite me to play this game? And also, while we're on the subject, can you put horses into space?
Of course you can.
With gunpowder.
Yeah.
I would have called in sick for work for this.
Well, you should have, because, look, this game, we played it with three players, and again, we played it in public.
Mm.
We had a lot of people walking past the table going, what is this? Why are three grown men doing this?
In a public house in public.
Exactly right. And it got a lot of attention. I thought, for the size of the box, this packs a hell of a punch, which is fantastic.
And, you know, the art, the graphic design, the layout, it looked really good on the table when we assembled that pyramid. As you said, there's no wasted space. You basically use every single card. There are a couple of extras to let you change it up a bit.
Yep.
But, a lot of game in a little package. I can see why David at Grail Games was really excited to get this one out there. The Kickstarter was really successful.
Mm-hmm.
I would certainly play it again, even though you wiped the table with a scarf.
Did I ever? So there are five wonders up for grabs, and they start with the pyramids and they go all the way to, space stations and all these wonderful things. And someone who is me ended up with four out of the five of these wonders. I think Mark and Carl, who was the other player, managed to snaffle about 14, 15 points. Someone had 35 points!
Yeah, it was a pasting, I must admit.
It was. We'll put it down to the fact that you guys are slow learners and I'm obviously very quick with it all.
I think one of the things was you got a number of good sort of military cards because there is this fighting that you can do where you can make people flip back their resources, which means they don't get to use them, or even actually steal
wonders.
Wonders, not necessarily with steel. But you got a couple of good military cards that meant no matter how much military we had, you always had enough to cover. Then at the end, you could actually steal back the wonders that we had.
Yeah.
And you're really cleaned up. So it has that interesting tactical back and forth element. It reminded me a little bit of Innovations.
Yep,
a bit like how in Innovations you've got the achievements that you get by having certain stuff when you're playing for points, but not in a huge way. Like, it's quite, definitely quite a unique game, I thought.
I agree. It's got a bit of a Seven Wonders feel for it with me as well. I think it really ticks a lot of boxes because it can be almost a very solo experience in that you're just focusing on your individual tableau. But having the fighting cards come out, which essentially do allow you to force another player to flip over resource cards and make them essentially useless or get rid of the wonders that they've worked so hard to win, make sure that you're always keeping an eye on what your opponents have got on the table because it's all open knowledge. The only thing is that secret is what's in your own hand. And even then, you can see what resources you've got because the cards are double-sided.
Yes.
So, look, this is a great game. I would certainly like to play it again because we would get that playing time down to 40 minutes to under an hour, I reckon. And Leon, obviously, you're more than welcome to join us if you ever aren't working.
I think that would be a good idea. If you're trying to tell me I can build a space station out of horses, I'm in.
Yeah, excellent.
I'm in 100%.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so, Grail Games, David Harding, another home run. Let's say home run.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, look, another one that I hadn't got to the table for a while. I went hot on and cold on. Mm-hmm. Now I'm hot again.
Okay.
Star Realms. Star Realms is made by some, as I understand, professional magic players. And you can see, because it has a bit of a magic feel, it comes in a small deck. You can play it with more than two people if you get another deck, but it's designed really to be a two-player game.
So can we just put that to the side and say about this as a two-player game?
I was one of those people that went out and went, yay, I'm going to buy two decks so I can play with four. It's not a good four-player game. It's a great two-player game. There's actually a really good app of this game if you want to give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
So I played it with my son, who's 14, and we hadn't played it maybe for like a year. I loved it again. So it has a bit of your standard deck builder feel where you start out with your very low value, one coin or one fighting value spaceships. That's all you've got in your hand to start with. And there's a central row of cards sort of a la Ascension, where as one card gets bought, another one comes off the deck. And then you've got these others slightly better than basic. They're like the Maria Hill of spacecraft, where in Legendary you've got Maria Hill as like a better fighter.
Yep.
This is like a space shuttle that you can get two coins or trash it and get two fighting if you can't afford to buy a proper spaceship, you know. So you're buying cards, you're attacking your enemy, you've got 50 points each, you've got these cool scoring cards to keep track of the points, and you're getting from 50 points down. You're buying different spaceships, and there's where the sort of magic feel is, there's like four families of spaceships that are represented by different colors, and they're called funny names like the Blobs are the green ones and the Merchant's Guild and something else for the yellow and the red ones.
The bred horses.
Yeah. but they sort of have a flavor. So the Blobs are like, you bring out lots of cheap ones and they do lots of damage, and the more you have out, the more they do. The red ones give you ability to sacrifice spaceships to do other stuff, which is great for getting rid of those crappy starting ships out of your hand. You've got the blue ones, the merchant guilds, that sort of will give you life back so you can actually go up in life, and a lot of coins as well. And then the yellow ones, I don't remember what they do, but they sort of do a bit of everything. So, and a lot of the cards have ally abilities. So if you play two cards of the same color, the ally abilities kick in. But if you don't, only sort of the basic ability. And these cards, when you buy them in the middle, they've got ships going from one up to, I think the most expensive one might be 8 or 9. The other thing that you have that's interesting, you have bases and are they starships? Or anyway, you have things that float and don't fly around. And they, star bases and planets, they go out and they stay there. Some of them you have to attack before you can attack the player. Some of them you don't have to, but obviously if you don't attack them, they stay there and they keep doing their ability each turn. So you're doing the usual deck builder thing of drawing cards, playing cards, buying cards, chucking out cards. But it's a lot of fun and it has spaceships.
Exactly. Now, this would be a game that I'm not a massive fan of the art. I think it's pretty much rote, you know, by the numbers kind of art. And, yeah, having played it as a 3- and 4-player game, I think, and this pains me to say, we played it wrong. because we played it where I'm going to attack you, Mark, and then, oh, you've taken 5 points of damage, and now I'm going to attack you, Leon, because I'm being nice. Whereas really it should be, Mark, I'm going to lay the smack down on you until you are dead and beaten,
absolutely.
And then I'll worry about Leon. So everyone at the table played it like we were too nice when we played it as a three- or four-player game. But I completely agree where this game is all about the two-player experience.
Absolutely.
I love those bases or star bases or planets or whatever they are because they add a really big amount of variety. And I like the fact that you can either just choose to go, I don't care, I'm just going to take any old ship that suits my current need, or I'm going to pick and choose and try and keep my blob empire growing and only going for those green ships because of the inherent abilities. Because, again, similar to a lot of deck-building games, all of the cards of the same type have that little unique identifier card that say, if you've got another card of this type, you can then do more attack, use more coins to buy some more cards, and so on and so on. And it is a lot of fun. It's a really small, it's basically the size of a deck of cards,
really.
So I think as a two-player game, it's a good, fun, quick experience.
Have you played this one, Leon?
No, but I've wanted to. On a quick little side note, do you think designers should start doing for games like this? And I know one of my other favourite two-player games, Summoner Wars as well, says this. On the box, that says 2-4 as well, which is just a lie.
Yeah.
I mean, you can play it four players, but it's just not the point. I think that along with the fact that on the side of the boxes they always have, it plays between this and that, I think a nice little symbol or just a bit of writing that says designer preference and then the number, or tested preference and then the number. Because there are certain games that even play up to, say, five players, that four players is amazing. You add that fifth and you just add, you double the time, you double the boringness and just, But I do want to check it out, I must say.
Yeah, well, and look, that is something, you know, there is a lot of rubbish on Board Game Geek, but one of the things they do have in all their games is they have what the official manufacturer recommends as far as plays and then what the suggested number of players. So, and that you can actually, you vote on when you rate the game. So that's quite an interesting point.
Yep.
Now, before we take a brief musical interlude, I will say we've got a fantastic competition coming up later in the show.
I know.
One of the games, because there are more than one you could win, is a copy of Star Realms.
Ooh.
So, there's nothing better than that.
The Postal Service with nothing better, the Styrofoam remix.
There you go.
I found out about 2.5 seconds ago. you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, Mark, your turn. What have you been playing this
week? What have I been playing, Guth? What haven't I been playing?
I don't know.
You know what I've been playing?
The multiverse consists of infinite planes of existence. Most beings live and die without ever knowing that their world is not the only one.
What?
There can be only one!
Not in this case, but there are the extraordinary few who are born with the spark. Not the old spark, I see you say, Leon. If their sparks ignite, these rare mages are the only ones capable of travelling to myriad planes of the multiverse, and they're not even DC comic characters, where they can reach heights of power almost impossible to achieve. They are known as the Planeswalkers. When Planeswalkers battle, it is a confrontation that can shake a plane to its foundation. Now is your chance to play as one and wield the boundless power of the Planeswalkers.
Doesn't that sound epic?
That sounded pretty epic.
Oh, this is an epic game, in fact. This is Magic the Gathering, trademark, Arena of the Planeswalkers, also trademark. And someone very cleverly has taken Magic the Gathering, smooshed it together with HeroScape, and made a board game. So for all those people out there who've been playing Magic for years and said to themselves, if only this came in a board game.
And if there was some other way I could spend some of my money on something Magic related.
That's right. Then this is it. So you've got your five planeswalkers. For those who don't know, Magic has its five colours of mana, the magic juice that powers the worlds of magics. And you've got white, which is like heroes and soldiers and nice things and healing. You've got blue, which is like magic, tricksy. You thought you were going to do that? No, I stopped you before you even did it. You've got black, which is, of course, the power of evil and dead things.
Necromancy.
And things you thought were dead, and then they're coming back from the dead. You've got red. What does red stand for?
Fire.
Fire and explosions and damage and power and stuff.
Go faster, Stripes.
And then you've, then you've got green.
You going to put some Frodo music on for green?
Green, no.
It's just like vegetables and stuff, green.
Green, yeah. Green is elves and grass and nice things and big, beefy green monsters.
Some elementals, for example.
Yeah.
And asparagus.
Yeah. So you've got the five colours, which have each have their own flavour. And in this game, like in the Magic game, you can play each of the five colors, the five planeswalkers. So the planeswalker is like this huge magician that basically runs the show.
Yep.
And then each color also has some extra monsters, creatures, things like that. And they're all different ones. Now, one of the things you've got to say about this game is there is a metric crap ton of stuff in the box.
Yes.
And for a retail value of about $60, you get 35 miniatures. Only five of them are, I don't know if I'd call it painted, sort of splodged on.
Pre-coloured.
Yeah, splashed. you know, those little Taiwanese children did not get paid
well,
much.
Well, look,
at all.
The thing is, Mark, it all depends whether you're playing it with your glasses on or not. Because I think if you play this game without your glasses on, they will look exquisite.
Yeah. So you get a great big hex board and a few other bits of plastic, and that's the sort of the hero-scapey part.
Yeah, well, it's a modular board, isn't it?
So with the figures, yeah.
So you are able to reconfigure the board, and there are suggested layouts for depending on the number of players, because
yeah, so it plays from 2 to 5, and
yeah,
a lot of people would think of Magic as only a 2-player game because that's the way it's most commonly played. Although I myself have played 2-headed giant Magic, which is actually 4 players. I've played Emperor Magic, which is 6 players.
Oh my god,
this goes to 5, but it really lets you mix it up with the number of players. Now, Garth, you and I played the 2-player version,
yep,
which is really a jewel of the Planeswalkers.
Yes.
Although that was also a great computer game from the 80s that I used to really like. Yeah, well, anyway. So you've got your creatures. You've got your Planeswalker. They're figures. They've got cards that have stuff they do that go with them. They're big, these big, long, rectangular cards. Then you've got a small deck of what are basically magic cards. Mm. Now, in this case, anyone who's familiar with magic will know what sorceries and enchantments are. Enchantment, just for a bit of a Dragon Age reference. So the deck is made up of only those type of cards. So they're sort of like spells that do stuff as a one-off, or spells that do stuff to your creatures or to other creatures that sort of sticks to them for a while.
Yeah.
So the cards provide a lot of interesting mechanics. Like Magic, you're just drawing one card every turn, starting with a small hand. So that mixes it up quite a lot. The five different colors have their different flavors. What else can I say about this game? It steps you through in the book how you play. So it's quite simple to set up, simple to play. Basically, you're drawing a card. You're picking which figure or group of figures you can activate. And that was probably the only tricky part is I look down and I go, oh, great. I've got zombies and bigger zombies and my planeswalker. But each turn I can only choose to activate one of those groups.
Yes.
And do the thing on the card for that. Then you can play some cards. Then you can move your figures of that one group you've picked. Then that group can attack. And then you move the turn marker and you go again.
There you go.
And all the games are limited by turns. So you've got only a limited amount of turns to get through and play this. So it really is a thrash, 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 not a sort of sit back strategic game. It's very tactical.
Yeah. Well, look, I would say that exactly right, because what I found about this and look, this game would play really well, I think, if you've played it half a dozen times and you've got your deck down pat, you know all the nuances, you've got a fair idea, because there's only 12 cards per Planeswalker that you're going to be drawing.
Yes.
So there's a fair chance that you'll be able to put your deck together the way you want it. Not surprisingly, when you're talking Magic, it might be sort of getting some expansions.
Possibly.
You know, you never know with Magic. But I really enjoyed this. I do think, and this is something you were mentioning, Leon, that It is recommended to be a two-player game. That's what most of the people who have played this game are saying. But the fact that it allows three, four, or five players to get in there and basically just have a free-for-all, I think, is great, because you are able to play two Planeswalkers versus two, or you're allowed to have all five in skirmish, which is going to be a lot of fun. The fact that you get to have a table that the board is massive, you get to have 30-plus minis on there, which is going to look fantastic in anybody's table, which is great. The fact that Magic can be a daunting game to get into, I think, when you go to your first Magic thing and there are people who have shelled out lots and lots of money to get their decks the way they want. To come in at the very, very start is a very daunting experience. So this is a great way to be able to get into a Magic scene that is still only relatively new, and you're able to go there, hit the ground running.
And I think it would also be a great game for people who play Magic. If they've got nerdy friends who don't play Magic, be a great way to introduce them to that world in a board game form where you can play with more than two people,
yep,
if you want to. And for nerdy dads who are into Magic to get their nerdy kids into, maybe. I don't know. I said a lot of value for money in what's in the box. Now, you got to say the miniatures aren't amazing. You know, no. They're certainly not to the quality of the, say, the Fantasy Flight minis. But then again, for the cost of five or six Fantasy Flight minis, you get this whole game pretty much. So I think it's excellent value for money. Leon, have you come across this one?
I haven't yet, but I do want to get my hands around it, I must say, because I have played Magic in the past, and I always liked the look of Heroescape, but that was kind of, it passed me by Heroescape, I must say. I don't know how, but it did. So this game does intrigue me, and I'm interested to see, and as you said, with Fantasy Flight, I'm sure there'll be a trillion different expansions and stuff to it.
Leon, if only you weren't here in the radio studio with us, you could possibly get your hands on a copy of this game, because we've got a competition later we're going to talk about. We've already talked about one game that's going to be given away, Star Realms, but guess what? We are giving away not just a copy of Magic the Gathering trademark, Arena of the Planeswalkers, also trademark. We are giving away this copy that we have played once, barely soiled. There may be some hidden surprises in the box.
Exactly right.
We are giving it away in our competition, plus a lot more games.
I know.
Now, Leon.
Yes.
Surely you've been playing something lately, haven't you?
I've played very little, but I must say, about a week or so ago, I had some of the lads around, just for giggles, and we whipped out a game which is about the most casual game that we have, considering the fact that it's barely even a game, but something that I think that every geek should have in their arsenal, and it's something that I reckon Mr. Schwartz would probably recommend in his section coming up, and it's a game called Geek Out.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Have you guys played Geek Out?
I haven't, actually.
I haven't, although I did see it on, was it on Tabletop? It was on half of a tabletop?
Yeah, it was on an episode of Tabletop, which is where a lot of people found out. Mm. I think I might have found out it myself from that episode.
Yeah.
And basically what it is they're cards that have, I think it's five different categories on them. There's two different versions of the game as well. There's Geek Out and Geek Out Pop Culture. I've jammed mine together into like one big super game, because all it basically is a deck of cards. And you get a dice with it as well, a die. And when you roll it, a color will come up on that die. And the color represents a category that's on the back of the card. And the categories are things like movies or games. Board games and video games are jammed into one called just games. There's comics, there's literature, music, and all sorts of things like that. So you roll the die, you get your category, you pick the card, and it'll say on the back of it, say we picked comics, and it'll say comic book heroes that wear a cape. And it'll say maybe three. And then from there, you just kind of go around the table and people raise the bid.
Oh, you bid up, don't
you? To see if they could name that certain amount of...
We played this at your birthday, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
I'm sure I did, yeah.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah.
And and you go around and raise the stakes until eventually it goes to somebody, and then they attempt to name whatever it is of that certain category in the certain
time. Just to make sure I'm clear, your raising is... You can name three. You can name four superheroes.
I can name seven!
Wow! Mark, it's all yours. Go.
Superman.
Yeah.
Batman.
Yeah.
Robin.
Yeah.
Aquaman. Oh, no, he doesn't have a cape. Oh, damn.
Well, okay. When he became the king, he kind of had it. That's a different story altogether. And generally when we played, because I said I put my two versions of the game together. When you roll the die, it came up with, say, blue, which could be, say, comic book on the normal Geek Out cards. And then on the pop culture one, it would be blue, would be something else. Everyone always picked the someone else because they wouldn't want to play comic books against me, which I thought was, I don't know if they take that as a compliment or just be annoying that I didn't get to play it. But the reason I think it's so good is because it's so, it's just a conversation starter, basically. Yep. People that are like-minded, like ourselves, that play these type of games and are interested in these type of things, we just kind of do it as an excuse to just have a chat, which is generally what, when me and my mates get together to play board games for, that's what we're doing anyway, is that we all have very busy lives. We're getting together just to kind of hang out with mates. So this is just an excellent way to, at the end of the night, I think a lot of the times, just to get the conversation flowing and go from there. There are actual rules in the book that I don't even know off the top of my head, because we don't play to a specific
amount
of points.
Who needs rules?
We don't put time limits on it. We just kind of just go from there. But yeah, it's a game that I highly recommend that everybody try at least once.
Excellent.
Fantastic. We're going to come back straight after this. He's been sitting in the studio waiting patiently. It's the Schwartz. He's going to talk to us all about his Christmas gift guide and help us launch this fantastic competition. Back in a minute. That was the very interestingly named Pleasure Fist by a local Tassie act called Straddlepuss. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mark, Garth, Leon, and our special guest in the studio, Andrew the Schwartz. Schwartz!
I got nothing that's going to top the name of that song.
So, Schwartz, we've got you here. Firstly, you're a fabulous purveyor of local-friendly gameness goodness with your store Area 52, and you have supported us so much in the past. It's so great. We're going to hit you up for more stuff, but let's talk about that later. But now, it's Christmas. People are shopping all over the world in a crazy Christmas shopping stupor. You must have some great gift-giving ideas, surely.
Oh, yeah. The one thing we want to do is make this a lot easier for people who go out and they have no clue what to buy for people.
Yeah.
So to start off, we're going to give 10% off to all your listeners.
Woo,
if
wow.
If they just mention that they heard me on the radio or are fans of you guys.
Yep.
Any game they want to buy is 10% off.
All right. That's one game.
There we go. Oh, well, we'll stick that up on Facebook. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Of course, this Christmas, I mean, there's a lot of great games. Games are becoming a much, much more common gift to give. And a lot of people have gone beyond that simple Catan, Carcassonne, Ticket to Ride, all those basics. And they've really started digging deeper for good stuff. And this year, one great game that's come out that I think ticks a lot of boxes for people is Mysterium. Because we just describe it as Cluedo, if you could play as a dead Mr. Plum.
Yep. Sounds about right, actually, because we were lucky enough to play this about a year or so ago at BorderCon. Was it this year, last year?
This year's BorderCon.
Jeez, what a long time ago that feels like. And yeah, I mean, the art on this is spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really interesting game because we fumbled through it the first time, and I particularly struggled a lot trying to get the clues that this ghost was giving out. But jeez, it's a good-looking game.
Well, hello to you, Mr. Ghost out there. We know you were trying your best.
Yeah, and it's had a huge amount of critical acclaim. Yes. I think it was Essen last year, maybe, that it was all the hotness. Yeah, and it's basically, I guess if you've played a known Dixit, it's just taking that same kind of concept to the next level in that you're trying to solve a murder, I guess. And it's a fantastic game. I'd really enjoy playing that again.
Yeah, it says it right there in the rules. You're dealing with an amnesia ghost trying to recreate the crime.
Yep. What else have you got?
Oh, there's lots of other great ones. One out there for more people who are more serious gamers that I've absolutely love is Blood Fury. This recently come out.
Ah,
okay.
This is a game that I've only heard about recently, but I've just been hooked since I found it. You're basically playing as a clan of Vikings when Ragnarok comes, and you're trying to get that last hurrah. You want to get into Valhalla. You want to be right there, and you've got to prove yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really got an interesting mechanic in that you have tactics and you have your clan, but a lot of it is dependent upon an early draft in the game. So your strategy approaching it just completely changes right at the beginning, depending on what you get.
Yeah, now I think we've got a local here who loves this game a little bit, don't we, Leo?
A gaming expert, should we say?
It's the game I talked about it previously. Blood Rage is what it's actually called. Not Blood Fury. I've done it myself a few times. And yeah, and it's a spectacular game. Just the miniatures in it are about the best looking miniatures that are out ever. And it's a really enjoyable game, and it's a game that I think that if people buy, that have been in their collections for many years to come. And it's by the sounds of it, how popular it's been, it's going to be supported with more things coming out, and the designer Eric Lang is always throwing ideas around. So yeah, no, it's definitely worth picking up. That's for sure.
So Mr. Schwartz, please forgive us. We didn't mean to correct you then. Leon didn't know his place, but we'll slap him afterwards.
I think we'll just talk to Eric Lang and say you should rename it.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah, Blood Fury is a great name. Now, do you want to give us a quick countdown of some Christmas games?
Sure. Number 10.
Sorry, I just love to play that track. Go for it.
No, now you put me on the spot. I can't do it.
No, it doesn't have to be a countdown. It just gives me an excuse to say, it's a countdown, and then I play that stupid track.
But there's seriously a lot of great games out there, and it really doesn't have to be these hard games. Like Fury of Dracula, another great one.
Yeah.
That's just been re-released.
Third edition.
Mm-hmm.
That's a more difficult one. You've got games like more classic games that have been around for a while. I mean, X-Wing has been out for a couple of years now, and it's not slowing down in its popularity.
Mm.
I mean, if you've got Star Wars fans with the movie coming out next week, it's a great game.
Yes.
You get to redo all the battles you've always loved.
And now you can get the basic version with the original movie X-Wing and TIE Fighters, or you can get the new version with the new movie X-Wing and TIE Fighters. Take your pick.
Exactly, and none of them have Jar Jar, which is fantastic. But the great thing is it's such an accessible game. Mm. So it's really good, because obviously around Christmas time, what a great excuse for some of us more mature people to play games with our kids, which is fantastic. I was lucky enough a couple of days ago to have two sick children at home, so we got out Sushi Go, because that must just be a family favourite for a lot of families around Australia. We played Hey, That's My Fish, which was amazing, which I bought in your shop not too long ago. We also managed to play something else,
Dice
Machikoro.
Cube Quest.
Oh, yeah, we managed to play Cube Quest as well that I'd bought in Area 52. And yeah, Machikoro, I had to remove the expansions out of it to make it the base game so that it wasn't as strategic, because my kids are a little bit younger. Mm. But it managed to make them feel good. Those games, I think, are classic, family-friendly, accessible games that you can put around a table of adults and they'll all have a great time. Or kids as young as, well, my daughter's 5 and she can play Sushi Go all by herself. She's really, really proud of herself and she loves those puddings.
You know, those are great choices for it. Machikoro, actually, recently we had a customer come in who was having problems with board games, having two little ones, who kept knocking the boards over.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't play anything that involved setup or pieces, anything like that. And they went with Machikoro, which is perfect for that.
Yeah. And you've just got the latest expansion.
Millionaire's Row.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah, I opened that the other day.
Oh, haven't played that one yet.
No, it looks great. The only thing I've got about that is that it doesn't explain which cards are from which expansion, so it does make the breakdown a little bit trickier, but I managed to figure it out. Now, what else? Because I've got plenty of presents I need to buy, but I'd like to make sure I keep some money for myself. What else is the hotness that you've got coming out?
Oh, for yourself.
Yeah.
There's tons. They've recently redone Twilight Struggle.
Mm-hmm.
That's being re-released. Mm. That's one, if you don't have, I think is a fabulous game.
Oh, no.
Number one game on Board Game Geek for years and years and years until Pandemic Legacy might sort of take it off its perch.
I would love to recommend Pandemic Legacy, but that is a game that is going to be hard to find this Christmas, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, have you got any copies left or is it all gone?
Oh, we have been gone for weeks.
Wow.
We were lucky enough to get in and get ours nice and quick.
Exactly.
And later on tonight, we're going to be playing more of that one. What about, Schwartz, let's say I'm a nerd. We all know that. But let's say I've got a friend who's not so nerdy. What are some of the games maybe that can tie into someone who has some different hobbies? What about, say, not that girls can't play any game, but, you know, games that might appeal to females, perhaps?
Are you trying to get me to tell you about My Little Pony?
Do you have that?
Oh, of course.
All know that's for men.
No, there's a lot of games that, you know, have that crossover appeal. And it doesn't necessarily have to be for anybody. I mean, the game, as long as it looks interesting and it's fun, can appeal to anybody.
Actually, I just saw, because I walked into your store off the street this weekend, the Queen's Necklace.
Yes.
I had that. It was produced by Days of Wonder. I had that back in the day when I bought, like, Pirate's Cove and Ticket to Ride. They released that. I think it might have been one of the Brunos is one of the designers of that back in 2005, 2006. I saw it had a brand new release.
Yeah, it was completely redone. I mean, the rules are basically there. They've been updated since a little bit since you played.
Yeah.
And they've kind of met with more of the standard that you get nowadays in the game.
And does it still come with a necklace?
I don't actually know. We haven't opened up the new one.
Oh, wow, because the original game, it actually had a real necklace that when you played the card and you got the Queen's necklace, you got to put on the necklace.
There you go.
My sons and I loved that.
I bet you did. I'd much rather play Nothing Personal and get the Capo's ring, to be perfectly honest. But this must be a big time for you guys in terms of your, you know, I guess your more gateway games as well.
Yeah.
So is this where you just see, you know, things like Carcassonne just fly off the shelves?
Well, with the recent redo of Catan, I mean, that thing's been selling really well. Carcassonne has been doing not as popular.
Okay.
You're actually seeing people kind of take that next step, and the games they're starting with are completely different. That's one that's kind of been being overlooked.
Yeah, okay. Wow.
I mean, you're seeing people get more advanced. They'll come in and they'll go directly to something like a Seven Wonders or an Alumbra or something like that, and it's just completely different. Now, there is a huge train community, so of course you see a lot of Ticket to Ride selling. Especially now that they've come out with the two-player card game.
Yes. Well, look, let's come back and talk about this some more. And then we're going to talk about not only is our competition coming, but winter is coming.
And who are you?
I just love that track so much. That was the National with the Reigns of Castamere, of course, from the Game of Thrones TV show.
That was a nice happy tune, wasn't it?
I was so happy. And you're here with the Iceman Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mark Garth, Leon, and the Schwartz. Now, Schwartz, you're going to give us a couple more games before we talk about the competition?
Sure. There's always more games to go around. One of the big ones that I've always recommended to people that I think is a great family game is Cranium.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yes.
This is a game a lot of people overlook, but if you've got an overactive child, you're trying to play board games with this Christmas.
And let's face it, who hasn't? It.
Exactly. Especially if they've had too much eggnog.
I don't know what's in your eggnog.
You got to do what gets the kids to sleep.
Yeah. But it's a great game because it involves a lot of elements from other games. It involves a lot of things, for example, Trivial Pursuit. It has singing, it has charades, it has just everything in it. You have to collect pieces of a pie, just like a game like Trivial Pursuit again. But you do that in different categories. For example, they have to do it in the creative cat, where they have to draw a picture, or they have to sing a song, or something like that. It even has Play-Doh right in it.
Yeah, I guess it takes a lot of the elements from a lot of the games that we know and love, and it basically is like a gateway game for a lot of families, particularly, to then be able to take the next step. Because we always think, oh, what would we like as a party game? And go, oh, Time's Up or something like that would be fantastic. Or you think of Ugg-Tect, where you're beating each other on the head with these big inflatable, clubs,
yeah,
I guess?
Yeah, spiky clubs.
Exactly right. And obviously, you think of a whole bunch of games, and Cranium fits a bit of everything into it. Again, suitable for a whole bunch of ages. Look, I had a copy when I was 10 or 15 years younger. I've probably still got the Play-Doh in there. I don't know whether it'll work anymore. But yeah, it's certainly something that's good, very family-friendly.
Yeah, we had a copy when my kids were a lot younger. It was one of the first games we played with them.
Now,
that's a great choice.
What about some hotness? Because I know that I've put in a standing order with you just to get something hot whenever it comes from overseas. One that you've talked about recently that I don't think you've been able to get yet. It is Codenames.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what else have you got that's on the boat from Gamesland?
Oh, that's coming.
Or somewhere, or just whether it's here for Christmas or not, or just something that you think's going to fly off the shelves and we need to order.
There's some great stuff coming out. I mean, I told you previously during one of the breaks about this new Epic game, which is Star Realms sequel,
mm-hmm.
which is a sort of a fantasy-based Star Realms. Again, it has a deck builder. Again, it can be 2 to 4 players, but they really have tuned the rules a lot differently.
Yep.
And it really feels like a very tight deck game where you don't have the issue of, say, a Magic or something where you have to spend all the money.
Exactly. Fantastic. I'm really interested in that one, actually. It sounds, need I say, epic.
I thought you were going to say interesting.
Another great one we've got coming in, Kings of Scotland.
Yep.
Have you played that one before?
No, it's got the giant monsters, but now they're wearing kilts.
Basically, yeah.
I'll never take your freedom, Mark.
No, I mean, I think one of the problems with Australia is just because of shipping, a lot of people don't send the smaller package games here. They mm-hmm. just look at it and they yep. go, that isn't going to be good. Exploding Kittens, whether or not it's a good game, just isn't coming here because of the size of it versus that. This is another game that kind of suffers from it.
Yeah.
Where you're basically playing the role of one of the classic lords of Scotland, one of the leaders of the clans, trying to unite it all. And mm-hmm. you start out with resources, you start out with generals, and it's a very, very good game. But the problem being, it's been a pain to get it over here.
Yeah, well, I think we've all been involved in having to pay way too much shipping just because the only place we can get a game is from overseas. I know I've certainly had to suffer that. And mm-hmm. Leon, I think, you know, part of what you do is spend a lot of money on a game and then double that cost because you have to get it shipped to you. Now, I guess my only other question is, what do you recommend for, you know, that lazy Christmas afternoon? Everyone's eaten too much turkey.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to have to sit there and, you know, digest a rule book, let alone all the food. Just something quick. Party game, relaxing, just talking. And what can you recommend as that kind of game?
Family Feud.
Family Feud? Yeah. No. All right, we're done now, aren't we?
No, there's some great Cash and Guns.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely, 100% I would say Cash and Guns. I mean, so many people have been on this Munchkin kick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got the same style artwork, but it's so much better.
Yeah.
It is a fun game. It's basically, if Heat was a cartoon... It's what happens. You've stolen the money. You've made the getaway.
Yep.
How do you divvy it up?
Yeah. Sure.
And you basically have to figure out how you're going to get the most cash. And who's got the guns gets the most cash.
Okay.
There we go.
Well, the thing that everyone's been waiting for, the thing they all want to hear about, is what we're calling the 12 Games of Christmas.
I know.
La, 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 la. Garth, how do you win the 12 Games of Christmas?
Well, this one, we need you to do some work because we're going to be giving away, courtesy of Area 52, a fair few games here. Dare we say 12?
12?
So we're going to ask you guys to do a bit of work. Now, all we need is you to send us a photo or a video or something audio. And it just needs to go on our Facebook page of you guys playing some games. That's about it. We're not asking for too much involvement apart from you to upload a video or a photo.
And look, let's give it a Christmas element. So
yeah.
Wear a Christmas hat or stand under some mistletoe or do something to make it Christmassy.
Exactly right, because we want to get in the spirit of giving and we need you guys to put some stuff out there so that we can share those photos or have a look and just make sure that everyone's out there having a great time. We will make a little announcement to say that if you do share the posts on Facebook, you will get some extra entries. We're not allowed to say that on Facebook, so we won't. But all you've got to do, put some video or some photo or some audio or something else media related that you can think about, playing some games with a Christmas environment, and you'll be in the draw to win one of our 12 Games of Christmas.
Now, the only disclaimer we need to give, though, Garth, is we can't guarantee, because of technical issues with how long the episodes are taking to get out at the moment, we can't guarantee you'll have your games for Christmas, but you'll get them in the short period after.
Exactly right.
Absolutely, and you will have a lot of fun playing them.
Yeah, so some of the games that we've got, obviously, we've already talked about Magic, Arena of the Planeswalkers. We're going to give a fantastic copy of 101 and 11sies from Grail Games. We've got a copy of Coup and Flux.
And Star Realms.
And Star Realms. We've even got a copy of Werewolf. And there's plenty more. We just haven't got time to say them.
We're going to have heaps more, but we've run out of time again. So thank you so much, Schwartz. Thank you, Leon, Garth, and Play More Games. We'll be back soon. Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.